Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. New York Magazine starts its new biweekly publishing schedule with the current issue, but maybe to keep us occupied and all the time freed up by having fewer magazines to read, they've included a pull-out booklet of six art tours by their senior art critic, Jerry Saltz. And he joins me now to talk briefly about some of the 44 pieces of art that he has mapped out. Hi, Jerry. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. It's great to be here.
So you've got six tours here, I see. Uptown, Midtown and Chelsea, Upper East and West Sides, the Met, its own tour, MoMA, its own tour, and Brooklyn in Queens. So let's just jump right into one of these pieces and tell us about the greatest piece of sculpture in New York, as you label it. It's in the Met, and should we take the word piece literally?
Well, it's a horrible thing to call anything the greatest piece of anything in any place, but this is a fragment of a queen's face made in Egypt in around 1350 BC. And what you're seeing, you know how you imagine Egyptian art and all the hieroglyphic figures facing sideways, carved into rock? Out of nowhere comes perfect figuration, perfect realism, carved in this beautiful mustard-colored stone, and it's stunning. You're actually seeing the birth of the modern mind. The only thing about the Egyptians is when they got to this, it's called 18th Dynasty, you could spend the rest of your life studying it. The only problem is when they got to that perfect realism, they just weren't that into it. And they went back for another 2,000 years to stylized figuration.
And so it looks like you wanted people to discover some hidden gems at the Met. Your MoMA tour seems to be a little more of the greatest hits tour. Van Gogh's Starry Night, Mondrian's Broadway Boogie, Duchamp's Ready Mades.
Right. Well, you know, when you get to MoMA, you're basically in the Himalayas. Because they're limited for space, they are only putting the mountaintops on view. So it occurred to me that since the mountaintops are on view, maybe I could get people to plant their flag there a little bit more. I wanted people to look at a Jasper Johns American flag. You know, he woke up, this 25-year-old kid, in 1955, and he said, "I dreamt I painted the American flag." And then he did it. How many artists out there listening to this right now dreamt a whole possible career last night, and they're just drinking coffee, listening to us instead? And but I wanted them to look at the flag and see that it's a triptych. It's painted in three parts, and there's an extra word on it that no one has ever written about it. It says United States on one of the stars. I hate to get porno, but the Pablo Picasso, it turns out, the women have Brazilians. And everywhere I've looked, no one's mentioned that. And the term Broadway Boogie Woogie from Mondrian, that's poetry in itself and can just open you up. So MoMA, crowded, only the mountaintops, but wow, what a trip.
All right. So you've got these six walking tours, and I'll mention that at 75 minutes, the Met Museum tour is the shortest of the six. Well, the longest is a six-hour walking tour of downtown galleries. Does the length of the various tours reflect the quality of the art on view? I don't think so.
No, actually, it really is geography. If you go, say, to Midtown or Chelsea, if you look at it, Brian, really, New York is a constant, ongoing, ever-changing museum. It's an art fair in progress 7 days a week, every day of the year. If you go just to Chelsea, forget Jerry Saltz's tour, and you just walk up and down 22nd Street, 24th, 21st, 20th, 19th, and a few other streets, go into every gallery. All I'm saying is art contains multitudes. Looking at art is a way to expand yourself. Looking at art is a way to argue with whoever's standing next to you or with yourself. And art's kind of tough sometimes because, of course, you don't like most of what you're seeing. I don't like most of what I'm seeing, But the great thing about it is the person next to you might be loving the thing you're looking at, and having that argument with why it's bad or why it's good is pretty opening.
And you do take people out of Manhattan for this, or give them places to go if they're already out of Manhattan, especially in Brooklyn and Queens, where you have spots in Bushwick, Williamsburg, Ridgewood. And the piece you sing aloud in Williamsburg is about the Williamsburg art scene from an artist who's been on the show, William Pojeda. It's kind of an art tour in itself, right?
Pojeda is kind of amazing. I don't know what to call him. I called him our Hogarth, in that he's kind of always commenting on the art world, art figures. He makes fun, pokes fun at people like me. And I think it's kind of fantastic. He sort of what would happen if you told the truth? At Pierogi, one of the oldest outposts in Williamsburg on North 9th Street, Pojeda tells the story of the Williamsburg art scene. And instead of just saying, oh, it's all good, he kind of asks, why did this gallery close? Maybe that gallery closed because they got too narrow. Others couldn't get their act together. Others tried to move on and become, you know, more successful on the greener shores of Manhattan and got slammed, and others are very famous. Look at it. It's an incredible insider's map to a scene that flourished once and is still flourishing, but flourishing maybe more in Bushwick, where I sort of try to get you to go to, say, Stephanie Theodore Art on 56 Bogart, a building in Bushwick with, like, 10 galleries, or Regina Rex on Troutman Street. The point is, New York is much more porous, Brian, than people realize. Everybody says, that's it, New York's finished, nobody can live anywhere. Wrong. Students I have from all over, they just move the next stop out on the train. And they live in Brooklyn. They live in Queens. There's a science fiction novel that sets the center of New York and Staten Island, which is a little bit horrifying to me. But someday maybe we will take boats to go see museums.
I'll throw in one more here. You include a piece by Laurie Simmons, the artist now known in some circles as Lena Dunham's mother. Tell us briefly about that piece and why you included it.
Lena Dunham's mother is an incredibly well-known artist. She's actually a friend of mine. I'm a godfather to Lena Dunham.
Huh.
And Laurie Simmons is a well-known photographer, part of what's called the Pictures Generation, that included Cindy Sherman, Sarah Charlesworth, Richard Prince, other artists. And Laurie Simmons has a new body of work at Salon 94, where she has people that dress up like Japanese dolls who look like little girls who then paint themselves like adults. It's very bizarre stuff.
Sounds
beyond
like
surreal, into the realm of not perversion, but something, as Edgar Allan Poe said, we are all splendid, but dark.
The Salon 94 Bowery. Do you ever wish you were a critic who could sit on the couch and, you know, watch Lena Dunham on HBO or something instead of walking all over the city to keep up with your subject?
Well, that world seems more unfathomable to me, and I love her show. I'm sort of stunned by it. I got to be on it this last Sunday. I had one line. I think the line was, I told you to buy two chickens before you come home.
The Godfather gets his line, but that has to be the last line on our show because we're out of time. Thank you so much, Jerry Saltz, New York Magazine senior art critic. His six walking art tours of New York are in the current issue. And, folks, you can keep the conversation going online at WNYC.org. The Leonard Lopate Show coming up right after the latest news, including Kathy Brennan and Caroline Campion with their favorite easy recipes for weeknight meals. Brian Lehrer, talk to you tomorrow.